This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, I'm Ken Tangen. This is episode 73 of What's It Like. My guest is Lewis Kim, somewhere in San Diego?
That's right, Ken.
So did you grow up in that area?
No, I've only been here 2 years. Prior to this, my family and I were in Barcelona.
Mm.
And we were there 2 years also. And we had moved from Texas. Texas is where I was born and raised, specifically San Antonio. Went away for college, came back for several years, and then went away for business school, and then came back again. So a lot of my years in Texas.
Did you come from a large family?
No, I have one sister, a little bit younger than me, and that's it. Two kids and then the parents.
So who had the biggest influence on your life growing up?
You know, I think obviously my parents. Both immigrants from Korea. My dad came in '56. My mom came in about a decade later. And you know, there were we kind of had a simple lifestyle. My parents had a small little store that's provided most of the income, and I just remember. You know, not a lot of pretense, not a lot of free time, a lot of work. And then my dad in particular was very, I don't know, he kind of imparted to me a lot of sort of moralistic principles. I remember him kind of, you know, always, you know, give me a lecture on some topic or another. And I would say both, you know, my parents were probably the biggest influence growing up.
What was your major challenge as a child?
Growing up in San Antonio, there were not a lot of Asians that I remember. And probably the biggest thing I remember all through elementary, middle school, and even high school was, unfortunately, you know, some form of taunting or teasing or bullying associated with just sort of being different, you know, being Asian, being Korean, looking different. And, you know, that was probably the biggest challenge I could remember growing up.
From both whites and Hispanics?
Yes, unfortunately, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, being a minority doesn't stop you from picking on other people who are different from your minority. You know?
No, that's true. It's a little bit ironic.
Yes. So where did you go to college?
Went to Brown. Graduated with a mechanical engineering degree, and then returned to San Antonio for several years, and then decided to quit engineering. Just was not, I didn't think I was going to be a good engineer. And then enrolled in Yale for an MBA.
Well, so raised in the Southwest, but Northeastern education.
That's right. That's right.
So now that you are a educated business engineer, what did you decide to do with your life?
Well, I had graduated from Yale when I was 30. So I had worked as an engineer for 6 years. I had also co-founded and then ran a nonprofit science education organization while I was working as an engineer, and that was also a very formative experience. And I just realized I was more interested in how organizations ran, and I also wanted a little bit more, I guess, say in my work and sort of it's on a business that I felt like, you know, then I could have as an engineer. So I was gravitating more towards just kind of business and business management. And but also in computers, I started in programming and had tinkered with computers ever since I had been a child. And that, and also wanting to get back to Texas, I interned at Compaq between my first and second years at Yale. And then after I graduated, got a job offer to come back permanently. So by the time I was 30, I kind of had a new career, new life, new degree, and started working at Compaq. That was about, I think, 13 years ago. So 1998. I kind of always look for a way to kind of rapidly have very different experiences. So I tried not to, get pigeonholed or get too comfortable in one particular role. And about every 2 or 3 years, there seemed to be some opportunity that would come up, and it would always be uncomfortable to kind of leave the foundation that I was building. I decided to just have different experiences. So over 13 years, I've had, you know, various roles. I've worked in different divisions, from computers to handhelds to printing, and of course went to Europe for a couple of years. And within that period, within the last 13 years, of course, HP acquired Compaq, and so I became an HP employee in 2001 or 2002. That's what I did after the first engineering stint.
You work for HP. But what exactly do you do?
Right now, I'm a vice president of some kind of a Skunk Works group, an innovation group. I'm a little bit limited in what I can describe, but we're chartered, or kind of our mission is to develop some new, completely new product categories, different from what HP has done before.
You can't talk about exactly what you do in terms of the products, and that's fine. But what do you do in terms of your day-to-day activities?
Sure. So I think I had mentioned what's a little bit unique about the group that I manage. I manage several dozen engineers with some marketers and some designers, all in one group, typically in a company the size of HP. Different groups like that report into different bosses, and then they kind of come together in a matrix way. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing is a little bit of an experiment to try and be more agile and quicker. We're chartered with a completely new category of products that we're going to try and launch in the not too distant future. And it's an interesting experiment in innovation and trying to work very fast within a bigger company.
Mm-hmm. What's the best thing about your job?
I work with a lot of smart people. HP, for a lot of people, it's got quite a legacy of innovation. And sometimes I joke with engineers that I work with I get kind of teased for saying this, especially with some of the older engineers, but I'll say, you know, gosh, you're the kind of engineer I used to read about in school. So we have a lot of smart people, and I also like the culture we have. It's very people-centered, and we sort of focus on the ideas and the products that we're working on. And also in the kind of job that I have, I also get to meet a lot of interesting people in our partner companies. So, we have a lot of other companies on the outside that supply parts or help us design and do our work. And, it gives me sort of a platform to meet a lot of interesting people across the world. I also get to travel. Just recently came back from a trip to Kobe, Japan, and then before that in Shanghai, just meeting some partners, doing some research. And those are some of the things I really like about what I do right now.
Well, let me turn the question around. What's the worst thing about your job?
You know, I always want to move faster. You know, I'm always kind of conscious about, you only have a certain amount of time in general, in life, and you want to make the most of it. And, sometimes working in a bigger company, it definitely has its advantages in terms of the resources that you can apply. I can pick up a phone and get, one of the world's best market researchers, or with a little bit more phone calls, get funding for a particular initiative. On the flip side, we're not a 10-person startup in a garage. And so some things might take a little bit longer than it would otherwise. And those are probably the hardest parts of my day.
What type of person would be good at your job?
Part of the challenges with, it's an interesting question, because I'm trying to think when I was in college, how I would view the different kinds of jobs that I've had. I've worked in very small engineering companies. I've led a nonprofit group, and then of course now I'm in the a Fortune 10 company. I think what's probably some of the key success factors for the kind of job that I have. One is definitely being able to collaborate and work with a lot of people. You know, if I was in a smaller startup, again, 10 people, and especially if I was leading the group, it'd be less about collaboration, more about, you know, sort of people acting on sort of my directives. In a company the size of HP, you know, you're working with a lot of people who are reporting into other organizations, other you know, have other missions. And the ability to collaborate and to influence is really critical. And some of the people that I've seen that have more difficulty may be brilliant, but may have more difficulties in sort of interpersonal skills, listening, empathy, putting yourself in the other person's shoes, and trying to figure out how, you know, you can both win together. I think that's probably one of the most critical skills. That's on top of kind of just general professional skills, just being effective individually. But I would say that's one of the things that pops out.
If someone wanted a job like yours, how would they go about doing that?
I guess, you know, what comes to mind is, I guess, the larger question of, you know, what kinds of things can you do right out of school to have a fulfilling professional life, I guess, is kind of a broader question that I think of. Yeah, I think when I look back at my career, one of the probably the most important things just out of school is to take chances. It's very hard to know and have a feel for all the different kinds of career and vocational options you have, and that you'll eventually, you know, that you may partake in, you know, as you go along your career. And one of the things that I hear sometimes from younger people as they kind of ask me about their career options is I sense a lot of hesitation or fear about having to pick the perfect job just out of school, or if they've been successful in that job for a couple of years out of school, a hesitation to leave that and take a chance in a different direction. And one of the things I always encourage people is, you know, really be aggressive, having a diversity of experiences early on in your career. One reason is to find out what you really are passionate about. And the second is build up a breadth of experience. There were a lot of temptations earlier in my career to stay where I was and to be guaranteed much more rapid advancement. The people that I see a little bit more flexible right now and more effective in a diverse set of skills, particularly at the kind of job that I am in, which is more of a general management job where you're not really a specialist, breadth of experience is really critical. And that means when I say breadth, I mean especially in business, it means having experience in disciplines as far ranging as marketing, engineering, sales. If you have a chance to work in different cultures and countries, that's also very, very critical. And then over time, you know, hopefully people will see your value. And you know, and if you want to rise to a more senior position in a large corporation, you know, that breadth of experience and diversity will help in that. There's probably another aspect, which is, you know, having a good relationship with the people who are managing you, and in particular, your manager's manager. You know, there are a lot of talented people whose work kind of goes unknown throughout the larger organization. And that sort of, I think, hinders their advancement. And I think, you know, in kind of a low-key but definitely visible way, you want to make sure that people are understanding your unique value throughout the entire organization.
If there is such a thing, what's a typical day like for you?
You know, my kids ask me that, and like, you're in a lot of meetings. Typical day, I'm quite lucky because I think I have maybe an atypical day in a company the size of ours. You know, on a typical day, I will be, all of our team works in sort of the same area. So I can walk down the aisle and meet with an engineer who may be at their computer designing a part or using a literally a file and smoothing down a part. I can walk down a little bit further and meet with a marketer who is sort of outlining the plans and how we're going to sell our product in the market when it's launched. I can walk down a little bit further and meet with a designer who's playing with some foam blocks to show what our product might look like and whether or not it's going to fit on a normal desk. So, you know, one aspect is meeting with a diverse set of people and kind of what we're building. You know, the day might also include a phone call or a meeting with people outside of HP who are our partners. You know, most recently I came back from Plano, Texas, meeting with one of our larger partners and their executives, and they were showing me kind of what they're doing and how we might work work together. The day also might include meeting with customers who are testing and playing with our products, and I'm getting feedback from them. And then, you know, the day also might include, of course, meeting with my own management managers, reporting on what I'm doing and getting some alignment on our priorities.
Does your job require extended hours?
It's a good question. I wouldn't say it's extreme. And I think it's really up to the individual on how they manage their time. I've seen people be very effective by, you know, working, I think, a reasonable set of hours. And I think I've seen people who stay up all night and, you know, really aren't as effective. So I think one of the lessons I think I would have liked to have heard coming out of college, I had the stereotype that, you know, more hours equaled more effectiveness. And especially when you're material level, you find that's really not true. There is a point of kind of diminishing return. So, you know, it's reasonable. And I think, you know, Ken, you found me through David Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, anyone that sort of studies David Allen and his GTD system sort of understands that it's more about being organized and effective than just long hours.
Lewis, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
You know, you go back to, you know, for me, I go back, try to go back to sort of timeless values. You know, I know this interview is kind of more around careers and vocation and direction and kind of what do you do more professionally. I think when you ask those questions, there's larger questions of, you know, your own values and sort of what moves your soul. And, you know, for me, I try to pay attention to what people over long, you know, periods of history have written about or have observed about what makes a meaningful and good life. And there aren't that many principles in the end, even though there's all kinds of books and companies that sort of regurgitate them. So I try to go back to what's important, and you know, what sort of motivates me is an idea of service and doing something meaningful with the gifts that people have, working with people, and feeling like I'm sort of living out those principles, and that's sort of what gets me back on track.
Let me turn the question around. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
I have a set of practices, you know, kind of quiet time, reading, meditation. I also practice martial arts, you know, trying to have something outside of work and you know, just basically things to quiet my mind.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
Sure. There's several. I think the childhood that I described earlier was probably one big challenge, and I didn't realize how hard that was until I think I was older. I think more recently, the deaths of my parents. My mother died when in 2001, and then my father died in 2008. And you know, those are pretty transformative experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, professionally, you know, I've now worked for, I think, about 20 years, right? 20 years since college in different jobs. And, you know, over that time, it's hard to appreciate when you're looking forward in your life that this might occur and how you might deal with it. But the truth is, you know, no professional life is perfectly linear and always upward and onwards. And I think one of the toughest things for students who may be accustomed to always getting good grades and you're always getting recognized, and it's a lot of that's driven by your own efforts and work. As you get older and you're working, you know, your success is going to be also influenced by things you don't control, and your career isn't always going to go up and up and up. And sometimes you'll have setbacks, and sometimes, despite how good your job is, things will not turn out. You may get passed over for promotion, or you know, you won't get support from your management, and those can be difficult. It causes a lot of soul searching about, you know, why you're working and kind of what your own sense of value comes from. And, you know, I've had a few of those, which has caused a lot of reflection too.
Is there an idea or a principle that has helped you through your challenges?
You know, I guess I go back to those timeless philosophies again. If anyone takes time to read and pay attention to what's been recorded in any either religious tradition or philosophical worldview, there's only a few set of principles that sort of seem common and have lasted over time. And, you know, I think paying attention to those really gives me comfort. And some of those principles are around, again, service, you know, being less concerned about about others. I find that those times where I've been more concerned about my, I don't know, position or sense of achievement or attention are the times I get the most disappointed. When I can forget that and worry about others, you know, things seem to work out better.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, giving your best advice, what would you say?
It's a good question. My first thought is to avoid all the cliches. find your passion. What would be what advice? You know, I guess it goes back to worry about others. You know, ultimately, serving others is the most proven path to contentment. That's what it seems to boil down to.
I want to thank Lewis Kim for joining me today. Thanks, Lewis. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate being asked.
If you'd like to leave a comment, ask a question, or get more info, go to whatsitlike.info.